Forbidden Panel welcomes you to Panelcast, Forbidden Panel's weekly podcast featuring movie and comic news and reviews. And now, your hosts, AJ and Brian.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 91 of the Panelcast. I'm your host, AJ, and with me this week, we have Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
And we have Martin.
Howdy.
This week, we will be discussing how we can actually post episode 90 and 91 at the same time. We'll also be talking about WonderCon and how awesome that was, and how much even awesomer it was without Brian.
Yep.
We'll also be going over some of the news that we got coming up, or news that went out this past week, as well as the Inland Empire Comic Expo, which is coming up in just a few short weeks. So, having said that, let's take our first break, and we'll be right back with all the news.
Hi, this is Justin White of Necrosapien Press and artist of ZKS, the Zombie Kill Squad, and you should come check out ForbiddenPanel.com for all your latest geek needs.
And we're back. So, the most pressing thing that everybody here wants to talk about, that we're all excited about, and we can't wait for it to happen, is the Teenage Alien Ninja Turtles.
Woo! Christmas 2013.
I've said a lot of horrible things about Michael Bay in the past, and I've got to say that this time is not going to be any fucking different, because I hate him.
Don't hold back, Brian. Tell us how you feel.
You know, I've been trying lately to be a little more, I guess, calm about reboots and remakes and people making things off of books and, you know, whatever. I mean, there are plenty of cases where it ends up producing something that's totally and completely amazing. Michael Bay is not a person that does that. He's just not. And I don't even bother trying to see his movies anymore because I can't do it. I can't do it anymore.
See, that's your first mistake. I see the movies and I know what I'm walking into. I know they're just fucking eye candy blow up bullshit. I never go to see anything of substance when it comes to Michael Bay. So, but that I'm okay with. Now, for those of you that don't know, this week has been a fucking tirade of information and arguments and issues coming out that Michael Bay had put out there on his official website that he was changing the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to have some sort of alien origin included into his story. And the outlash and the outrage that came from the internet community was just crazy. I mean, everybody just said, what the fuck are you doing? He basically, I don't know if you guys remember a few episodes back where, you know, we discovered that Michael Bay is actually, you know, an action term. So he Michael Bayed himself, you know?
Yes, he did. That's the right way to use that word.
So he's Michael Baying the Ninja Turtles, which I don't understand why everybody's surprised. But
I'm not surprised that he's Michael Baying the movie. I mean, that's a given. I don't understand how it's happening in the first place.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Here's my argument on his behalf, and that'll be the only time I ever do this to him. At least he's letting you down now. The movie hasn't even been made yet.
right.
At least you're not, like, fucking walking in going, what the shit? What do you mean the Highlander's a fucking alien? Right? At least you know when you walk in that this is what's going to happen. So he's breaking your heart before the movie even gets made. So now it's up to you if you want to continue to see it. However, there's been response. Martin, what's the response been?
Well, the response has pretty much been negative. First thing that came out right after the announcement and fans got in an uproar was Michael Bay got on and said, yo, take a chill pill. You know, we're early in the development process. You're going to have to see where we're going with this, and you're really going to like it. And it made people madder. They came out and they got angrier about it. And then that brought on people like the creators of the Ninja Turtles who came out and talked about it. The voice of Michelangelo in the first movie came out and just blasted Bay about all of this.
Isn't that Corey Haim or Feldman?
I'm going to have to look up the name on which one it was because there's been so many that have played Michelangelo. But he basically just said he's raping his childhood by changing the Ninja Turtles into aliens.
And
I believe the direct quote from Michael Bay was, fans need to take a breath and chill. They have not read the script. Our team is working closely with one of the original creators of Ninja Turtles to help expand and give a more complex backstory. Relax. We are including everything that made you become fans in the first place. We are just building a richer world. No, you're fattening up your fucking wallet, you fucking chode. Like,
right. Anyway. Both creators came out and said something about it, too.
That's the same thing they said. I mean, I loved Watchmen. But that's the same thing they said about Watchmen. We're getting with one of the creators. Well, you didn't get with Alan Moore. So which creator are you actually getting with? Sorry, Brian. We keep cutting you off. What do you got to say?
That's all right. Here's the thing that's my main problem with this. I mean, aside from the Michael Bay problem, which obviously is huge, the changes that he's making don't make sense. They're called the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They're not aliens. They're mutants.
Right, you're changing the title of the character.
He's probably just going to like call the movie Ninja Turtles, you know, just shorten it down to that, and he could just fucking do whatever he wants. And it turns out they won't even really be turtles. They'll be just some sort of reptilian aliens, and their shells will have like some sort of fucking, you know, special technology, and they'll have utility belts. And
if I see Gatling guns rising up from the back of the shelves, while I will jizz with geek glee over how cool it was would be, I will still be upset.
Yeah.
Though, you know what he's probably doing is he's saying that the ooze that created the turtles was probably of alien origin.
That's one of the things I was thinking about too. Maybe it is something where it's an alien effect on the turtles so that they still mutate. But the one of the main things that everybody keeps pointing back to is that it's such a good idea because it creates the opportunity to have numerous amounts of turtles. The creator, co-creator, Peter Laird, was saying, the reason I say it could be a genius idea is that for the first time, someone has come up with a way to have as many freaking turtles as they want.
But why? That's the whole...
Why do you need a bunch of them, right?
That's what made the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles so unique, and that it started off originally with four. I believe they added a fifth later on, but it started off originally with four.
Yeah, that happened in the TV series, and we won't talk about that.
But it made them different. That's what made them, you know, stand out about everything else. Yeah, sure, we saw a whole bunch of fucking Island of Dr. Moreau rejects showing up with, you know, the half Razorback and all that stuff. And
well, no, those guys were fine, you know.
Right, but there weren't a swarm of turtles. It, you know, I'm not hearing, like, we're going to Turtlelandia and... hanging out with the grand poobah of turtles, you know, and the whole planet's full of it. Like, how are they going to explain that away? Unless, of course, they're saying that, you know, the waste that the turtles get exposed to is alien in origin.
You know, that, Michael Bay should just get together with Tim Burton from his Planet of the Apes thing, and then they could just, like, mesh the two together, and it'll be Planet of the Turtles.
There you go.
No, because I don't want to see Mark Wahlberg in that movie either.
Oh, the worst part of that movie being Mark Wahlberg or Michael Bay, though.
See, that's a toss-up right there.
Yeah, that's a debate for
Mark
a future
Wahlberg's
episode.
I think Michael Bay is much worse.
Right, well, yeah. I mean, Michael Bay, everything he touches turns to exploding shit. And, well, Mark Wahlberg does have some redeeming qualities, i.e., didn't we talk about this last week? The Departed and whatnot. But still, it's Michael Bay.
So... what they're saying, there's a new story that's out about this right now, from the including the director putting his two cents in on it, because Michael Bay, the official statement was, when you see this movie, kids are going to believe one day that these turtles actually do exist when we are done with this movie. These turtles are from an alien race, and they are going to be tough, edgy, funny, and completely lovable. So first it sounds like he says he's making a Muppet movie. And then the director, Jonathan Liebsman, looks like how you say that, who's working on Wrath of the Titans, which looks great this time around, goes on to say, I heard about all the news. I'm glad there's such a passionate fan base. I think it was good news for everyone, but literally, I've just been locked in a room with Kevin Eastman. So he's working with the other co-creator, and they're both trying to come up with something that they say the fans will love, and Eastman is completely on board with it. So it sounds like we're kind of back at that Watchmen thing, like you were saying, We've got one that's going with it and the other one that's not.
All right, but again, you know, as you and I discussed the other night, you put money in my pocket and you can do whatever you want with CKS.
Right.
You know? It could be Alien Kill Squad. I don't give a shit. You put money in my pocket. And it seems like that's where Eastman's going. However, Eastman is taking the same direction as, like, all the Spider-Man cartoons that come out. Like, how many reboots of Turtles do we have to see? Every movie that comes out, except for the original trilogy, has been another origin story, the same origin story over and over and over again. Even all the TV shows, even the comics. He just recently rebooted the comic series where it's the origins all over again. And but at no point in time are we seeing anything of alien nature. So
no, there was an animated movie that sort of meshed all the three different genres of Ninja Turtles together.
Right, but at no point in time were they fucking aliens.
No.
Right.
And here, no, beam me up, Donatello. You know, it's just...
No. Well, you know what? I'll even go so far as to say that I could probably get over the alien origin thing with any other director. I know what's going to happen with the Michael Bay treatment in this movie. It's just there's going to be no substance to it. It's not going to be anything that I could follow. And you might say, well, it's just, you know, it's just a Ninja Turtle movie, so it doesn't matter. And I mean, yeah, okay, that's true. Fine, whatever. It's no movie really matters in the grand scheme of things, but in terms of making a, I mean, I would even just say making a movie just for the sake of having a movie, you should try to make it something that's worthwhile. And Michael Bay just doesn't do that. Every single movie that he makes, regardless of what it is about, it is the exact same movie. It doesn't matter whether it takes place during World War II or on a fucking alien planet. It's the same movie. The explosions just get newer.
He even did a commercial, like, mocking himself about all the explosions.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, you know, I would like to see Michael Bay, his biography. Just, like, make a movie about his life. And
you know what movie he did in Michael Bay? The Lionel Richie Collection.
I'm sorry,
did he just
what?
Brit of that one?
Yes. IMDb beat it.
Wow.
He did the Lionel Richie Collection, which could have shown fucking Nicole Richie exploding and nobody caring about it. But, yeah.
Well, the director finishes his statement as saying, anything we expand will tie right into the mythology. So I think fans will go apeshit when they see it.
You mean the apes
probably
are going to...
also going to put Shia LaBeouf in there, too.
They're going to throw shit actually, at them like apes.
He's going to be Casey Jones. I don't know if you heard that yet.
Are you fucking serious?
No, I'm completely kidding.
I almost stabbed myself in the heart right there.
And show over. Yeah, they... you never know who he's going to put in there. At least he doesn't seem to work with the same actors over and over again. You know, Will Smith and Martin Lawrence... He's going to try and squeeze them in there somewhere from Bad Boys?
See, that's
or...
not completely fair, because that was only two. He only did that with two movies with them.
Yeah, and he did get rid of Megan Fox for that third Transformers.
Well, that's because she wouldn't suck his dick anymore.
Right. She said mean things about him. We're all saying mean things about him. Why doesn't he quit?
Yeah.
Or fire all of us.
So there you have it. TMNT turning to TANT. It'll now be called TANT.
Taint? What?
As in, you can't do that.
Uh-huh. But
so, there you go.
Wow. And with that, I think we can all go to break.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll go back to even more non-emotional news updates.
Good idea.
Be right back.
Hi, this is Brandi Offset of BrandiOffset.com, and every week I listen to Forbidden Panel's Panelcast because AJ and Brian are the coolest dudes that I know, and because I like to hear my advertisement in between the panelcasts.
Hey everybody, we're back. So we're going to go ahead and get started with a few news stories here. So it looks like the TV show Fringe is going to be getting the same sort of treatment that Buffy and Smallville got, and that it's going to be continued on after the fifth season with the comic book to sort of fully wrap up the story and continue on the myriad of different story arcs that have been forming in the series. I don't know how I really feel about that. I mean, I probably will end up going and continuing the rest of the series in the comic form because I happen to particularly enjoy Fringe.
I don't think it's going to be able to hold up the same manner that that the other stuff is that the TV show holds up in. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but to me, Fringe is like the perfect TV show. I've never seen a bad episode of Fringe. Each episode is compelling and engaging, and it makes me want to continue watching it. And to translate it over into comic book form kind of takes some of the magic away from it.
You know? Well, I think it's definitely – it's going to lose a lot of its audience in comic book form because I guarantee that a lot of the people that watch Fringe do not read comics. I mean, Fringe, yeah, it has like the weird sort of sci-fi element to it, but it's still the kind of show that appeals to a wide audience of people, I think.
See, I think that's just way too bold of a statement to make. I think that Fringe watchers are indeed comic book fans, and that's where a majority of the fan base comes from. Because you have to be able to suspend your disbelief in such a manner that you know your casual viewer won't be able to accept. I mean, even as much as the similarities to the X-Files as the show has, X-Files fans were huge comic book fans as well. Because it touches base on it.
There's a significant proportion of people that read comics. You know, plus comics are becoming more mainstream now anyway. But I think that Fringe is still going to lose a significant, you know, slice of its audience once it becomes a comic book because there's just going to be those people that aren't going to read it.
And now this is all held on the contingency that Fringe doesn't get renewed next season. Now, this only happens if Fringe does not get the renewal. If it does get the renewal, then we'll be saved that drama. But, I mean, I've read Buffy Season 8, and I like Buffy Season 8. I didn't like the new Angel that continued on from the TV series, and I didn't even bother with Smallville because even though I watched every episode, I didn't give a fuck enough about it to read the comic book. I mean, the whole point of the series is to see him put on the Superman suit, and you didn't even see him on the Superman suit that much. So why would I read a comic book where, again, it takes away the magic of actually him being in the suit and shows it drawn out? It's just not as fun as it could have been, you know? So it's the same with Fringe. I mean, there was even an episode where they were animated. How are they going to do something like that in the comic book? Where they're going to make an issue where they're not animated? It just, it takes away the magic for me.
That's actually an interesting idea. You should hurry and write them and get that realistic versus animated episode in there somewhere.
I've already copyrighted it. Trademarked for Bin Panel.
The first thing I was wondering, Brian, did you read the Fringe comic book that DC Comics put out?
No, I have not.
Okay. And see, it sold out its first issue, but then after that it kind of tapered off and they only did a couple more issues of it. But it wasn't central to the story. It was more like side stories and things like that. And so for them to continue a show as a comic book will be an interesting concept. My other question is, can Leonard Nimoy still be in it, or does that break his retired from acting role?
Well, I don't know. I mean, he's not making an actual physical appearance in the comic book, you know, like unless, again, they do the reality picture comic book like I suggested earlier. So I suppose he could continue to show up, but I don't know. So, some of the best things about Fringe are the graphics and the visualizations, especially when they switch over to the alternate universe. You know, the contrast in tone and color and the steampunk feel to it. You know, you're going to lose that in the comic book. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, moving on. Martin, what story you got for us?
The news this week, I'm sure everybody has heard, Walking Dead has finished its second season with what I think people are calling one of the greatest show-ending seasons ever. There were some big episodes leading up there to the end, but we'll hold the spoilers. I know some of us here have not watched it yet. But the big news was that they've cast Michonne, and I'm going to butcher her name to death, Denai Guerrera, and they showed a version in the ending of the season. But they didn't actually show her, and then she'll be taking on the role, come back for season 3, which that was huge news for everybody, and to finally have somebody cast in that role. After we had heard earlier in the year that they'd cast the governor as well. So some of these characters from the comic books are starting to appear, And if you've watched the season, you know that additional characters will be a great part of the next season.
You know, I'm just excited that it's finally getting to my favorite story arc in the comic book, and that being the prison and the governor and all that. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering how we're going to see, again, you know, I keep saying this over and over, but I'm wondering how we're going to see the spoon incident, you know, how that's going to play out on TV.
I am highly skeptical that that's going to make its way into the TV show, honestly. I mean, if it was on HBO, maybe, but it's AMC, and while they haven't been pulling punches too much with the show, I think that's probably one they're going to pull.
Now, I haven't seen this season at all. I'll lie. I caught the first episode, and I think I caught the seventh episode, and I just haven't been into it. It's been a little too slow to watch for me, and I'm not appreciative of the changes that's been made, so I haven't really been watching it. So
now, you were just saying that this is your favorite story arc of the comic book series. As a fan, is that what you've just been waiting for? Like, you're kind of not as into these early stories so that we get to that part of the story?
Well, you know, I don't want to say that. I'm just – the show itself kind of drags, you know, honestly. It's just
it does have some slow moments, but I have to say that for myself, as a fan of the comics, I still really enjoy this show. I think that the changes have been interesting and in some cases – been a little confusing, but I've enjoyed it, and they haven't changed a whole lot. Like, this season's been kind of weird because it's almost sort of a mishmash of different story arcs that are all sort of combined together into the farm. So there's, like, some things that have happened later in the comic series that happen now, and then some things that happen, but happen with different characters, and so. But definitely the ending of this last season, I thought, was pretty good, and it's given me hope that the next story arc is going to be a really good one.
Now, a lot of people that I've talked to about Walking Dead, when we were at WonderCon this past weekend, I mean, we're a zombie comic book publisher. So everybody and their mother was walking up asking if we watched Walking Dead and how much we loved it. Even where Robert Kirkman walked by the booth. But so, like, my answer to them, well, their responses to the show were, it would be nice if we saw some zombies every now and then. You know, and apparently it's turned from, you know, a zombie show into a high drama show. Just have a zombie cameo every now and then. Now, is that true with this season?
Well, yeah, but I think that that's sort of how the comic is anyway. It's not
about... And I was excited about that because the comic book itself is so character-driven, I thought it would be awesome. But when it transcribes over into film onto the screen, at the end of the day, you're watching a zombie TV show. Shouldn't the zombie show up?
Yeah, and I can't think of a single episode where they weren't in it, at least, you know, once or twice. Like, there's always some point where the story does end up revolving around the Walking Dead. But again, you know, a lot of the story that they've been handling in this has been sort of the dynamics between all of the characters and sort of showing, you know, the tension between the stress of living in this environment and just the stress of having to live with other people and how, you know, the various characters deal with it.
It just felt like, you know, the two episodes that I saw, that the zombies showing up, they show up at a convenient time to end an argument, or when the group is really starting to fall apart, the zombies will show up and let the group band back together. You know, it's just really convenient timing.
Transition.
Right. Like, oh shit, everything's failing, toss a zombie in there. Sweet, fixes everybody, let's go. You know what I mean? It just felt too convenient to me.
That's how the spoon scene's going to play out.
Sort of. I mean, but usually what ends up happening is it just postpones the conflict until later. I mean, pretty much throughout this whole season, it's just been these characters that are trying to deal with these conflicts between each other that they have, and nothing really is getting resolved.
Right.
And, you know, they just keep sort of picking at each other and picking at each other, and then in the meantime they have to keep dealing with zombies.
And don't get me wrong, I will be watching season two in the off season, so I'll be able to formulate an opinion and everything once we, and be prepared for season three when it comes up. I'm just, it didn't grab me enough to make me want to watch it, or at least, here's a good way to explain it. I have the same problem with the TV show that I do with the comic book. I hate the fact that I have to wait in between, you know, that time, either the week or the month for the comic book, the week for the TV show, to see what happens next. It goes too slow and drags too much to make me want to jump back into that the following week or find out what happened the following week. It just didn't do it for me. So for the comic book, I read it a story arc at a time. So that way, you know, I can satisfy myself and hold on till the next issue or the next arc comes out. And I think it's the same way with the TV show. I got to wait and watch the seasons all at once so that I can enjoy the full season at a time, because waiting a week in between is just too much of a pain in the ass to me. And I just get pulled out of that element. It's like, you know, Martin and I last night, we went to go see The Hunger Games. And unfortunately, we're surrounded by thousands and thousands of teenagers. And they were clapping when parts of the movie, you know, were happening, stuff that was happening on the screen. And for me, I don't know about Martin, but when they were clapping, it kind of took me out of the element.
Right.
It took me out of the mood and the mode I was in to watch the movie. And so I had to slowly slide back in. It's the same thing with the TV show with The Walking Dead. I got to wait a week before the next episode comes out, and I'm just not emotionally or prepared to see it. And after a while, I just don't care. So I'll just sit down and watch the whole season all at once and see if that satisfies me.
While the producers and the cable channel don't appreciate that, I think you're on the right track with watching something. There's so much stimulation in the world today with pop culture and everything that having to wait a week between these episodes, people get in and out of that mode so often.
Right, and they get
in. And it's hard to really focus on everything.
Especially with a show like The Walking Dead. I mean, I had the same problem with American Horror Story. I'm going to watch an hour of horror with commercials.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how am I going to get in that mind frame? And then I got to wait a week for the next spot. You know, with American Horror Story, I would wait like 2-3 episodes, let them build up and watch them all at once and feel satisfied at the end of it. So hopefully this will come out. And I know the producers and AMC don't appreciate the lack of hits as far as the ratings go, but I'm sure that they really appreciate the Blu-ray sales when they come flying out the fucking shelf.
Yeah.
And that's the advantage of having shortened seasons like they do in the BBC, 12-episode seasons, boom. You don't have to wait as long for the DVD or the Blu-ray to come out. And also, it wraps up so quickly that you can sit down and watch them all at once, not watching 22 episodes of Buffy, you know, dedicating a whole week of your life to watching the whole season. It's totally different now.
Well, and like BBC, AMC's been doing a really good job with the hype during the off-season or the breaks. Mad Men wasn't back for 18 months, and they had a huge premiere or they have a huge premiere coming up for their new season. And just the news during the off season, the Style magazine or Style book that comes out about it, Walking Dead, you know, they're already talking about the theme song or the theme music for the prison episodes next season. They're talking about casting rumors. They've got this board game coming out. The Blu-ray sales will be out before we know it.
And the video game.
Yeah, the video game is getting closer and closer, and so this carries you to the next season. And shows like BBC do that with things like the episodes of Doctor Who. They've had this huge break leading into their big 50th anniversary season.
I almost forgot that hype was even watching that show.
Yeah, and there's big news for that show this week. And so you have this hype that carries you kind of through, and you can wait it out to watch all the episodes together and then learn about what's coming up for the next season, and by the time you get there, there's enough to carry you through.
Right. All right, I think we've done enough of The Walking Dead. Let's move on to the next story.
Yeah, we could be here all night.
No kidding. It's been a... sorry, I'm like losing it. Heat Vision reports that two new screenwriters, Matthew Fetterman and Steven Skea, are negotiating to come on board the long-gestating sci-fi adaptation of Why the Last Man. Development on the film has been on and off since 2004 with the likes of Brian's very favorite boyfriend, Shia LaBeouf, and Alicia Keys linked to star. while filmmakers DJ Caruso and Louis Leterrier were attached to direct in different points.
Stop, you're hurting Brian's head.
Now, Fetterman and Skaya, who have worked on TV series like Jericho, Warehouse 13, and Human Target, are starting from scratch and will ignore previous drafts by Carl Ellsworth, as well as previous casting choices. So basically what they're saying is that they're going to give Wyatt Lassman a chance again. They're going to get new people in there and see if they can bring life to this. I will say, I've said this before and I'll say it again. It would make a better TV show. Mm-hmm. Wyatt Lassman is too episodic to be slammed into one movie. It's just going to fail. Put it on HBO. Put it on Stars. Fucking call up AMC, like we were talking about. It deserves a TV show.
It's really the only way to even properly capture the relationship between York and
355. Yeah.
So, I mean...
And his sister. And his mother. And the astronauts. Well, and the fucking monkey. Yeah, you have to put it on a TV show.
Yeah, definitely. You're right with that, especially with the formula for it. And that would be another good show.
Right? Without Shia LaBeouf, I'd watch it.
Yeah. And we don't have to worry about waiting in line with a bunch of teenagers.
I'd watch pretty much anything without him in it.
I mean, come on. Think about it, TV producers. You're talking about a TV show where the entire cast, except one person, are female. We're all going to watch it. Hello?
The monthly calendar sales alone would pay for the show.
So, anyway, we'll keep you guys updated with any new news that comes out about it.
I do have one bit of a quick news that I don't think we can touch on for too long here, but just huge announcement this week as well was they announced the new Doctor Who companion.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Which, I just saw her.
Jenna Louise Coleman, who it cracks me up, their biggest role they're crediting her with was her small part in Captain America, the First Avenger. But she's been on a couple of soap opera-like shows and things over in England, or Great Britain, sorry, I should call it by the right name. And so she'll be coming on during the Christmas special this coming year, which will be kind of cool to have a new companion. But that was big news this week in the terms of Doctor Who fans.
She looks doable.
She looks young to me.
Yeah, that's the other thing I was going to bring up.
Well, you know, I mean, there's been a whole host of different types of companions, so.
Right.
I have hope. I mean, so far, Doctor Who has been pretty consistently good across the board for me, so.
Right. I don't think it'll be a problem. I just think the look is, it's interesting to see how the look of the Doctor has changed, even in the, since the reboot in 2005, as well as the change in the look of all of the companions over time.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I think Doctor Who's stupid. But yeah, so I fully support everybody's decision to watch it.
It was big news for geeks. Just wanted to throw it out there real quick.
Brian, what story you got?
Well, it looks like a trailer full of Avatar Comics goods was stolen on March 20th. Apparently during one of the... It was returning from WonderCon and was supposed to be headed to a convention in Emerald City and ended up getting stolen from a parking lot in Anaheim. It was apparently full mostly of Max Brooks' stuff, World War Z, The Zombie Survival Guide, a whole bunch of his books, and then a few other things, Freak Angels Cross, Neonomicon.
Was it Richard and James? I bet you they did it.
Shh, don't incriminate people on the air.
Sorry, Richard and James. Come by my house.
That's sad news, but who leaves a trailer full of merchandise like that at the corner store comic book shop in Anaheim? And this isn't like Disneyland area Anaheim. This is off beaten path Anaheim.
This is Ghettoville Anaheim. Yeah, I know.
Right. We've been to signings over there.
Well, pretty much every area of Anaheim that's not Disneyland is suspect.
Yeah, and so to leave something like that there without, I mean, they could have even chained it to the wall and still would have gotten stolen, but it just seemed really risky to have left that there.
You know who probably took it? The Marvel people over at Disneyland. They're like, we're licensing this shit right now.
Yeah, it's down there with Walt's frozen body.
Yeah, that's a shame because I mean, Avatar had a pretty decent booth set up. I mean, they always have the same booth set up. If you ever notice, every Avatar show has the same exact layout. You know, the books are so high that you can't see behind the booth, except for little segments of like 2 feet of window where you can see random signing people. And which is a shame because, like Max Brooks, you can barely ever see him behind the piles of zombie books that he's surrounded by. But it always feels like a treasure when you do see them.
Right.
But yeah, to have their entire stuff get stolen, that just sucks.
And they're always good people too. I mean, even though their booth is kind of set up a little cluttered, like they're good people. Max Brooks will sit there and sign until, you know, he's got to be at a panel in 30 seconds. Like,
right.
He sits there. They've had the guys from Crossed at the Phoenix Comic Con last year almost miss their panel. They were a few minutes late because they were there signing just so they could get all the fans. And, I mean, they were having little kids wear those creepy masks. But
right? Why would you have kids wear a Crossed mask? What was wrong with you?
Why
you
not, though? I think it – I mean, they –
Yeah, if you read the comic,
scary
it makes
characters,
sense.
Put those kids, yeah, you know, put those kids with that crossed image on their face, and I would
some
be
of the most fucked up things I've ever seen in a comic book happened in Crossed.
Yeah,
so
Crossed and Preacher, make up your fucking mind.
Yeah. So it sucks. That was terrible news, but again, you know, where are you going to park something that is going to be safe?
My house.
Or leave it where it's going to be stolen.
You know, if that shit was parked in front of a four-color, it wouldn't have happened.
Nope.
Martin, what you got?
The next news I got was we got a release date for the 300 sequel from Warner Brothers. They officially are labeling it to be released August 2nd, 2013. So we're just a year and a third away. And the funny thing is they're calling it 302. Right now, in the news release that I'm reading. So hopefully more news will come out about it. We did have an official title at one point in time, didn't we?
Yeah.
Something about Xerxes. And they have the character who – or the actor who played Xerxes coming back for the second one. That was announced a little while back. But now we have an official release date. And that will happen in August, shortly after Warner Brothers releases Hangover 3 – and then yeah, there's that Pacific Rim movie coming out in July.
It was 300 Battle for Artemisia.
Artemisia, yeah. So, you know, Warner Brothers seems to be building up their 2013 summer because we also have the new Superman movie coming out then as well. So it'll be interesting
another
to see.
Another one?
Yeah, yes.
Where have you been?
Zack Snyder.
Apparently not paying attention to Superman movies.
We've been afraid to tell you because we didn't know how you'd handle Zack Snyder making it.
Right.
But, yeah, that's going to come out probably
I don't really have any particular problem with Zack Snyder. So.
Oh, okay. Superman was coming out this year.
No. It was supposed to be Christmas. They delayed it 6 months to June 2013.
I'm going to delay you.
Which is fine. I'd rather it be a summer movie, but... Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see how that plays out. That's a whole other podcast episode itself. So, again, get ready. The 300 sequel. Hopefully it will be as cool as last time with all the spray-painted abs and, you know, practically naked men.
Woo!
Yeah. Any movie with practically naked men, I'm there.
We know AJ will be first in line with all those teenagers.
Why you gotta make fun of me, Hunger Games?
Yeah, hey, I love that movie.
Moving on, one of the other cool things about this past week's WonderCon show was the awesome trailer set to the music of Kathy O and Trent Reznor's remake of Triumph Song of the new Battlestar Galactica spinoff called Blood and Chrome. It focused on Adama actually being on Galactica and fighting in the last... I think last 5 years of the Cylon Wars. It was initially envisioned as a web series. The network greenlit the property as a 2-hour TV pilot in October 2010. But, and this is retarded, because like I said, at WonderCon they showed us a trailer. They pumped it up as a new TV show. I was all excited because I love me some Battlestar Galactica. But due to extensive post-production, the completed pilot wasn't delivered to Sci-Fi until last November. back in January came where the network top brass were trying to figure out a way to make the series work financially. But now, Sci-Fi has decided to pass on the project as a regular series, but is looking to do it as a digital one produced for the web. The already produced 90-minute pilot will air on the network as a movie at a presently undetermined date. So, yeah, talk about cock tease. You know, they show all this great footage. I even put the trailer up on the website. I was all excited to see it. Getting ready for the new TV show, and they're like, eh, never mind.
Well, you know, I mean, if the trailer, or not the trailer, but the like the made-for-TV movie thing ends up doing pretty well, they might expand it into a series. That's what they did with Battlestar Galactica to begin with anyway.
Right.
They did it as a mini-series, and then it got a good enough of a response that they went ahead with the actual TV show.
And then that shitty series that's on right now, I can't remember what it was called. But I remember I don't like it.
Caprica.
No, I used to like it, but I don't like it anymore. It has a chick from Stargate.
No idea.
Anyway, it started off as a web series and ended up on Sci-Fi as a TV series. So, I mean, there's hope in that this will pick up enough steam and get adapted into it. But it could go the route of Caprica, which was slower than The Walking Dead and was basically tanked halfway through the season.
I don't want to hurt your feelings or burst your bubble, but I have a feeling that they're going to make it a comic book.
No one likes you, Martin. I just wanted to let you know that.
Oh, Battlestar Galactica has such a huge following. It's
right,
but it's like Star Trek. You know, Star Trek always had that weird, huge following in its fan base, but it never got the newer fans that they needed to make ratings on a TV show.
I don't know. Next Generation went on longer than the original. I mean, you got to remember that Star Trek, the original series, only went on for two seasons. True. You know, it was only on for two seasons. Everything after that, those two seasons were the basis of continuing on with six different iterations of Star Trek and 13 different movies. So, you know, all you need is a good base and foundation to start off. Stargate, which tried to do the same thing, had four different versions of it, as well as, you know, the original movie, three different direct-to-DVD videos, and, you know, they're still considering making another one. Now, Battlestar Galactica originally was also two-year, two-season TV show, which came out in the 70s, that they decided to revitalize here, and those, five, six seasons that it came out were solid-hitting fucking seasons. I mean, that was some of the best sci-fi TV that's been on TV in a long time, but they dropped the ball with Caprica. So hopefully the new version of Battlestar Galactica was strong enough so that they can keep trying a couple more times until it catches.
Yeah. Well, it seems like they're sort of expanding on some of the events that happen in the plan. So,
right.
And
I imagine they could have a pretty solid, you know, action packed story out of that.
I mean, they tried the same thing with Babylon 5, and it seemed to work somewhat. They tried it with Farscape, and that seemed to kind of go. But Red Dwarf, the same thing, you know. So we got to find a sci-fi show that works, guys, because I'm getting sick and tired of not having sci-fi on TV.
Yeah, and you know, like I was going to say with Star Trek, it did, like you were saying, have all those movies and those things. Battlestar Galactica has also had a lot of movies and straight-to-DVD videos and things. But it seems that the new fan base, they just can't get anything but zombies on TV or vampires. Vampires are the other thing that are starting to bug me on TV. We don't get a lot of sci-fi, and I was hoping something like John Carter, the movie, was going to help with that. But again, that kind of flopped as well.
Right.
And so where sci-fi on TV is going to come in, you know, Fringe, sci-fi.
Right.
If anything, I mean, sci-fi should be the title of the show. They do such a great job with that science fiction storytelling there that you would think it would be more mainstream, but it just doesn't seem to catch enough.
And they're
they're not putting the Nielsen rating boxes in geeks' homes.
Right, and they're not trying. They're going to try again with the remake of Space 1999. So we'll see how that goes. But we need some serious sci-fi on TV. Something non-animated.
Well, they keep trying. It just the shows never last.
Yeah. Well, I think we're using the wrong rating systems or something.
Well, I think they need to stop showing it on Friday night. Friday night has been known throughout history as the show killer because nobody's home on Friday night. They're all fucking partying or seeing the new movie that just came out or something. Stop putting sci-fi on Friday night. Put it on a different night that's non-competitive, and you're good to go.
Depending on how geeky people are, you know, we're three guys sitting at home on a Friday night. I'm just saying that some of the fan base is in on Friday nights. But yeah, you're right. Friday night is where they send shows to die. And if you want people to watch, I mean, Sunday night. Remember when Sunday night used to be a lame night of shows?
Right.
Because everybody was getting ready for the week to come, and so no one watching. And now Walking Dead, the Mad Men, those kind of shows take over Sunday night.
That's because
the Simpsons made their name on Sunday night.
Right, right. That's because people got smart and realized that people are doing fucking laundry on Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do while you're doing laundry? Watch TV. You say, yeah, we're three geeks sitting at home on a Friday night. Are we watching TV? No, we're doing something else.
Well, you guys don't want to know what I'm watching while you're talking. But anyway.
I know what you're watching, which is why I'm dancing the way I am.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. What's the next story we got, Brian?
Looks like Tim Miller's going to be directing an adaptation of Gravel, which is Warren Ellis's comic book. The story's going to revolve around a character named William Gravel, who is a soldier with the British SAS, and is also a magician who uses dark magic in order to fight supernatural beings.
Yay.
Now, who got the rights to adapt it? It's not a BBC show, right?
It's going to be Legendary Pictures.
Okay.
Legend. Wait for it. Dairy.
So, because when you do a movie about a British soldier in the United States, wondering how they would portray that, how they would push that forward and make that a mainstream thing. You know, the first thing that pops into my head about that is from the most recent Incredible Hulk movie, where they bring the British soldier over and bring him into the U.S. Army or the U.S. military and things like that. It just seems kind of weird to have a central character that's British in a U.S. movie. Not say Britain is bad, because, you know, I'm a Doctor Who fan. But
probably Americanism.
Well, no, I get what you're saying, though. Like, whenever an American production company makes a film, a lot of times they either just Americanize the character, like in the case of Constantine, you know, or they do some other sort of thing to get them into America.
We're fucking geeks, right? You realize that? We're getting pretty deep into the geek lore here. Like,
a little bit.
I just wanted to touch base on that. Moving on.
Yes.
I'm excited to see Gravel. It was a cool comic book and a cool concept. It's had like three different volumes. And it seemed really hard to catch on. In that, again, it's one of those comic books that, like, each issue takes forever to come out. And by the time it does come out, you're like, oh, yeah, I read this, you know. So hopefully the film does it somewhat justice. Martin, any stories?
I think that was it for me in terms of new news. The only other thing that I'd like to mention is Hunger Games made $70 million already since its opening. And not a huge Hunger Games fan, but I read the books before the movie came out just so I could check it out. And attending the movie yesterday, you were there. The lines wrapped around theaters all over the country for midnight screenings.
Now, not one line. I just want to make sure it's clear.
No. I mean, there were lines.
It didn't start in Redlands and end in New York. No.
That would be pretty awesome considering we have the center of the
Inland Empire
comic book explosion in the Inland Empire here, but
that's right.
No, all of the theaters all over the place were doing that, and so that was very cool. And to make $70 million is a big deal in the movie industry right now.
I just got to go on record and say that the audience that we were with was some of the most questionable audience members I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I thought Project X was going to bring out the underage hoochie mamas, but Hunger Games brought them out, like, worse, and I don't know what it was about it, but...
And it was different than a weird Harry Potter crowd, too.
Oh, yeah. Harry Potter's all innocent and fun and happy-go-lucky.
Well, the Harry Potter crowd usually is just, you know, a bunch of kids and, like, they're
like
Harry Potter
cosplayers and stuff like
that. Yeah, yeah.
No. Hunger Games was fucking sluts.
Yeah.
I'll just say it right. Sluts and douchebags all hanging out. And I think it was, hey, Mom said we can go to a midnight movie without them. Let's go. And it just, yeah, it was kind of awkward being at the theater, but I'd like to see the movie with an adult crowd and see how that goes over. Moving on. ABC has announced, the head of Marvel Television, Jeff Loeb, has given some updates on some of the TV series that they're producing. Without going into too much detail, these are live-action shows that they're getting ready to work on, one being The Hulk, that's coming back out, a.k.a. Jessica Jones, which was based on a comic series called Alias, not to be confused with the TV show that was out. It's actually a really good show, a comic book. The Punisher is coming out for ABC, those three. Now, ABC Family is developing Mockingbird and Cloak and Dagger. So it's going to be kind of weird. Just a little background. Everybody knows what the Hulk is about and the Punisher, a.k.a. Jessica Jones, is about a failed superhero who's rebuilding her life as a private detective in New York City. Again, the comic book was phenomenal. And now she's a major player. She's actually in the Avengers. She's dating Luke Cage and they have a baby. Cloak and Dagger will be about two teenagers who find each other and realize their powers both complement and complicate their lives. Mockingbird will detail the life of a freshman at a prestigious university who is a science major that is recruited by S.H.I.E.L.D. and forced to become a student by day and super spy by night. So, yeah, those are all being developed. We should see them on TV within the next fall.
Now, do you think, you're saying by next fall, do you think it's actually happening because it's Marvel Disney now?
Yes.
Because we've seen shows like Lock and Key, which we were all excited to see. We've seen Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman, of course, needed to fail if you've seen the pilot, but we have all these comic book shows that are out there that seem like they go to pilot and then they never air. Do you think Disney's just going to put it out there, whether it's crap or not?
I think that we're going to have pleasant surprises at Comic-Con. And
yes,
that with the release of the Avengers coming out this year, Mockingbird is an Avenger. Jessica Jones is an Avenger. The Hulk is an Avenger. So these shows that are coming out are going to segue into the Avengers sequel, which is going to have more characters in it. Already with the Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes Season 2, they're already showing the aforementioned characters in the trailers for the next animated season. So, yes, I do think that they will go to TV, especially with ABC. Now, whether or not they succeed or not is a totally different story. I don't see the Hulk succeeding on an ABC nighttime TV show.
Not unless they bring back Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah,
right. I just don't see it. It's just, we're saying that how sci-fi fails, the Hulk being the epitome of sci-fi and big budget. You know, what is it? It's going to be like the old Hulk. He's going to change once an episode, and then after that, it's going to be boring. You know,
and then they're going to start coming up with completely ridiculous reasons why he changes.
Right, and then we're not going to see a lot of the villains that he normally fights against and stuff like that. It's going to be too big of a budget for the Hulk to come out. Now everything else, yeah, that's all tech. So we could see a lot of that easily because it could all be faked at some point in time. So yeah, I do think we will see them go to see them on TV at some point in time.
I saw the Hulk as more of a cop out. Instead of doing an Incredible Hulk movie that actually does well, they're going to do it as a TV show. But like you're saying, putting it on an ABC, putting the Punisher on ABC.
Right.
I know Disney owns it, but really?
Yeah, the Punisher is going to fail. I'm going to tell you that right now. It's failed as a movie. It's failed on TV. And it's failed as a Marvel character. The Punisher has failed in itself. He just does not fit. He's a fucking vigilante that kills people. You know, none of that fits in any of the genres in which they present him in. And in the movies, they don't portray it properly. On TV, they're not even going to portray it. How are they going to do that? It's just not going to work. You know, and in the Marvel Universe, he's the most useless character that's out there. He continuously kills everybody while people like Wolverine and Spider-Man just say, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, it's just, he's the oxymoron of the Marvel Universe, and I don't see how that's going to work as in any TV show or anything like that, unless he's tossed on like Spartacus. Put him on Stars, let him get violent and crazy as he wants, and don't associate him in any way, shape, or form with Marvel, and you're good to go. You know, it's the same thing they did with the Blade series. If they went the same way with Punisher as they did with Blade, we'd see a more successful franchise. But I just don't see that happening.
And you heard,
I don't know, the Punisher's just kind of boring, though. I mean, he doesn't do anything that's unique to any anything.
Right, he doesn't appeal anywhere except as a vigilante killer.
Right, and we got plenty of shows like that already. So. Right.
Well, and they were just saying in the comic books how his story, they repetitive. It's the same thing over and over again. So now they're sending him to space.
They did the
so
same
he's
thing.
He's going to shoot people in space now?
How'd that work?
He's going to go to space now. And so, you know, for a TV show, it would be very interesting. And I still haven't heard anything about Disney, the adult channel. So where are we going to get that quality?
That'd be a porn I don't want to see.
Yeah. I don't know. Real Life Princesses, XXX version. Anyways, so...
Ursula, really?
Hey, have you seen your artist Justin White's new Ursula picture?
I still don't want to bang it, no.
Yeah, okay. But they, you know, they don't have a channel where that's like Stars or AMC or things like that that they're associated with that they could put these shows on. And so they're going to put them on ABC, Desperate Housewives doesn't even push the line anymore on that channel.
Castle's as bad as it gets on ABC.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. We're cutting short too long on this segment. Brian, did you have anything else you wanted to add in?
Nope. That's everything I've got.
Okay, I have something real quick I wanted to throw in. A few years ago, we did a review on a comic book called The Red Star. It was set in an alternate USSR where futuristic technology commingles with magical elements. And the protagonist is a Red Fleet soldier who goes up against an ex-leader who rules with an iron fist. Chronicle helmer Josh Trank is developing to direct the Soviet-themed sci-fi fantasy graphic novel for Warner Brothers Pictures and Original Films. Jason Rothenberg penned the script while Neil Moritz will produce. Warner's picked up the project after Universal put it into a turnaround. So Chronicle, again, being groundbreaking that it was, they're already making a sequel to it, and the director is going off to make The Red Star. The Red Star is a pretty awesome comic book. You can also pick up the video game. It's on, I believe, PlayStation 2 is where the game came out. So it's a real awesome comic book. If you get a chance, pick it up before the movie comes out. So having said that, let's go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, Martin and I will try not to ooze on screen on the mic as we talk about WonderCon. Be right back.
Hey, I'm Penn from Mostly Harmless Entertainment. Come check out all our cool videos and movies that we do at mostlyharmlessent.com. You can also find us on YouTube at YouTube/mostlyharmless. Check out all the cool stuff we're doing around Redlands and IE and California and Washington and the world stuff. Okay, bye.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to PanelCast. Sorry for the long, drawn-out segment that was the last segment, but...
I'm not sorry.
Once Brian gets knocked in, that motherfucker never shuts up. I mean, we do all kinds of stuff to get him to stop talking. We moved him to Boston, for Christ's sake, and he still talks.
Yeah.
So in this segment, we're going to talk about the wonderment and awesomeness that was WonderCon. We had a booth there. But before I get into how great the booth was, let me shoot it over to Martin because he got to go to all the panels and find out all the stories and stuff. So, Martin, go ahead and bore us with what you got to say.
Well, not all the panels. I only got to go to panels on Saturday, and I literally sat in the third floor ballroom all day to see the movie panels, which paid off in some respects and didn't in others. They kicked off the show with the trailer park, which was kind of cool. They showed a lot of trailers we've already seen, and we actually started to talk about earlier. They showed Paranorman, which is Disney's new kid that has paranormal powers. They did Dark Shadows, the new Tim Burton, Johnny Depp movie, and talked about a couple others, that Spider-Man and things like that that we've seen at previous shows and online. Then they kicked off Fox's panel, which was promoted as the Prometheus panel, and of course drew big crowds for that purpose. And did they start with Prometheus? No, they started with this movie called The Sound of My Voice, which is one of those reality fake movies about a cult that follows a woman who's supposedly from the future and has a secret handshake like the Little Rascals. It was the creepiest, weirdest thing I've ever seen. They actually brought people out that are supposedly in the real cult that the movie is based off of and had them talk to everybody and do the little shake in front of them. It was so weird. So if you get a chance, don't watch The Sound of My Voice when that comes out.
How does that make any sense? How are we going to watch The Sound of Your Voice?
Really? I mean, it was the weirdest movie I've seen pitched. And of course, you know, Fox said, "Hey, we'll bring Prometheus, but we want to market our cult movie to you."
Before Awesome,
I don't know. That
here
sounds
comes
like
some
something
shit
I would watch.
Yeah. Let's lower the bar really low so everyone's all disappointed, and then we're going to build it back up. And so they built up to their next movie, which was the Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter panel.
Yay!
Which was kind of cool. They brought Ben Walker out, the guy who's playing Abe Lincoln, and they showed footage that has not been released yet of a scene that is in the end of the trailer that's been recently released of the exploding train accident bridge thing that's coming up and is going to be a big part of the movie. And talked a little bit about the movie, clearly stating that the movie is based on the book, but is not the book. They're going to change it up a little bit. They put a main central villain in the movie. They gave Abe Lincoln a new sidekick who happens to be black.
Did you say Abe Lincoln?
That's what I call him. And they showed the axe, a lot of what the main weapon of the president slash vampire killer carries, and just looks awesome.
You know, I gotta say, from the trailers, that guy can handle an axe.
Yeah, and did you see? It looks like the Swiss Army knives of axes. It built-in shotgun. It's got a blade bayonet thing on the end of it. The axe head is tipped in silver. I mean, this guy is a supernatural killing machine with that one weapon, and so that'll be kind of cool to see. And if you've read the book, you know that the weapons in it were very descriptive and a very big part of the story. So it'll be cool to see how that works out.
Now you mentioned, you know, the book. From what you've seen, do you have to have read the book in order to appreciate what you're going to see?
Absolutely not, actually. After seeing the footage and listening to the panel, I thought the book was kind of slow and boring and very descriptive, overly descriptive in some places, that I could not figure out how they were going to make a movie. And then seeing the footage and listening to them talk, they Hollywoodized the movie. The way they adapt it makes it a standalone version. And if people go back and read the book, they're going to be disappointed by the book, I think, rather than the movie.
Okay.
So, and they put an ending in the book, or in the movie, that's not in the book. The book has an ending as well, and it didn't leave it open to sequels or anything like that. I don't know that the movie's going to do that. It could very well. If it does well, maybe they'll make more. Or maybe, you know, the vice president will become a vampire slayer or hunt werewolves or something. But they've made the movie an adaptation of the book and used parts of it, but it's not the main thing. The whole joke is that the book is a biography, the true biography of Abraham Lincoln. So there's a lot of history involved as well, which is kind of a cool feature to put in. And of course, after that, we finally got Prometheus with Sir Ridley Scott, Charlize Theron, and Michael Fassbender on stage. Turns out Michael Fassbender is kind of a weirdo comedian kind of guy. I think they said the word penis 3 or 4 times while he was answering questions. So
that's weird. I just thought it 3 or 4 times while you were talking.
Oh, wow.
And that's why Brian's never allowed back on the show.
And that's why we keep him on the East Coast. But they brought out Prometheus. They gave us all really cool 3D lenticular posters of the movie. Came out and talked about...
You said lenticular.
The idea of coming back to the sci-fi genre. Sir Ridley Scott says he absolutely enjoyed it. Can't wait to make another one. Fingers crossed on that one, how that works out. And then they showed a lot of footage. They showed a trailer that ended up being leaked the day before online, but was still cool to see on big screens with 1,000 screaming fans. And Charlize Theron and Michael Fassbender both talked about their characters. Fassbender referring to the fact that he's a robot. They want to open that up right away. They don't want that to be any sort of secret or trick or anything like that.
Did you see the trailer that they made for him? Did they show that at all?
They didn't show the clips that they did of him. They referred to them, though. They just showed the trailer that they were going to release.
Yeah, there's a trailer out that's just, it's, you know... Weyland Yutani Industries has always been about making androids look as human as possible, and it just shows a box, and in the box is the android body, and it's slowly becoming more and more human, and then at the end it's all David. So it's pretty cool. I put it up on the website.
Very cool. He does a great job. I saw a lot of reminiscence of Data from Star Trek. in the idea, but that his character, just the work on it, looked great from what they showed in the footage in the trailer. And I think it's going to be a great role for him. I mean, everyone talked about how great he did as Magneto. I think this is the next one that he does that is great. People still haven't gotten their heads wrapped around, was it Shame? Was it Shameless or Shame? Shame.
Shame.
Was the name of the movie he did. Some people have seen it and completely applauded his role there, but this will be another one that I think people will talk about mainstream. That was pretty good. And it was a lot of fun to see Charlize Theron up there. She called herself a bitch several times. Her character is a bitch, and that she's doing a lot of bitch roles.
And that a bitch.
That transitioned into the next panel that came up from Sony, which was Snow White and the Huntsman, where they brought Charlize Theron back out to talk about being the evil queen and to play that role. And she compared herself to an artist having a blue period, and she's in her bitch period with young adult Prometheus and now Snow White. And then they bring out surprise guest Kristen Stewart, and every male in the room got up and tried to go to the bathroom. The line was so long, I got trapped inside and had to watch her socially awkward, shifting around in her chair. The best part of the panel was when some girl came up and was like, "You're so commonly playing weak characters." And I'm pretty sure Kristen Stewart was about to jump off the stage if Charlize Theron had not grabbed her arm. And started to say, "No, well, I won't even get into my power in Twilight and blah, blah, blah." And people stopped listening. That movie, the footage, the trailer, which has now started playing in front of Hunger Games and a couple other movies, looks much better than Mirror Mirror. I don't know what your guys' opinion is.
Dude, you know, I was about to text you last night during the trailer. That fucking trailer looks awesome, with the exception of Kristen Stewart. Though I did see a few parts where she was emoting. Which
right.
she might just win. She may just win an Oscar for that, just to show an expression.
Yeah. You know? What? Wait. What? She? Oh, wow.
What?
No.
Is that her excited?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking polish her up a statue. Let's go.
Yeah. That is automatically default win right there.
Right.
But it was. It looks better than the other Snow White story that's out there. I didn't like that they were comparing it to Alice in Wonderland at first, just because Alice in Wonderland had a very
stupid
acid trip kind of look to it. When you saw it, it was very colorful and things like that. This is not supposed to be that way. But then they show the mirror on the wall character, and I think that looks awesome. It's a man that liquefies as a mirror and comes out off the wall and talks.
And when he shatters like a mirror off and kills everybody,
right?
The trailer looks phenomenal, and I was actually amped. I was like, "Ah, crap! I got to see this movie."
Yeah. So, and Chris Hemsworth looks like Thor, just with mud on his face, and no weird Marvel hero suit.
And
but other than that, it looked about the same for him.
No Aquanet haircut.
Right. And then the next movie, AJ, sorry, I got to talk about this real quick. Resident Evil Retribution.
What is this, number 7?
6, I believe. 5th, is that what you said?
6.
6, yeah, 6-1. And I don't think this is the last one.
No, they're planning on...
I think there's more movies than there are video games at this point.
Yeah.
Well, he said as long as fans will keep watching him... husband and wife came out on stage, of course. They didn't get her to say Lilu multipass this time around. But they did show footage from the film. They specifically showed one scene that they're not showing anybody else yet. It's not going to be in the trailer. And it's Alice walking through this white-walled room and just... beating the shit out of a bunch of zombies. And
you mean there's actually zombies in this movie?
Well, infected, I should say, I guess, right? Is the right term?
Yeah, well, she's
infected. And they looked decent for infected people. But do you guys remember when they came out with the 3D movie a couple iterations back?
Yeah.
And they had that scene in the bathroom where she's fighting and like they throw the axe at the screen and it felt like it was coming out. This movie, she's shooting bullets at the screen. And it hits the head of a person and explodes. But instead of seeing the bullet come out at you, the blood explodes at the screen. It was actually really cool how they shot that. So that one scene looked good. The rest of it just looks like any other Resident Evil movie that came out. And, people will pay for it. They'll probably make another one if they make enough money to cover costs.
Now,
even if they don't.
As generic as the Resident Evil movies are, and as much as I complain about them when they come out, I still see them.
Yeah, I think they're still worth going to see.
They're still entertaining. Just for
the stunt work and the action in it. But
I've only seen the first 2.5.
And no interest to see the rest? You'll get around to it one day.
I honestly, I might have watched the entirety of Resident Evil 3, but I don't remember it. I remember that there's like, she had two knives and there was like a desert or something.
Or something.
I don't know.
Yeah. And then after Resident Evil, the big headline panel of the day, besides Prometheus, once they announced that Emma Stone was going to appear at WonderCon for the Amazing Spider-Man panel, everybody jumped in line for that one. They closed the room off, and the line still on the third floor wound up and down the hall. They closed the escalators to get up to the third floor because so many people were trying to get into the room for this panel. They didn't give any swag away in the panel, but Emma Stone did come out on stage. She was there with Mark Webb from the film, and they talked a little bit, and then they showed the exact same footage that came out during the Untold beginning story thing that happened at theaters worldwide a few weeks back. So it was nothing new. They didn't show any new footage. The big thing was just Emma Stone was in the room laughing about having to dye her hair blonde. So it was okay. It was cool to be, you know, within 50 feet, which I stayed within my restraining order distance and took as many pictures as I could. But other than that, the panel was kind of disappointing in terms of news. It was no new footage, no special footage for WonderCon, nothing like that.
Yeah, but you got to go and do something really cool and see a movie.
Yes, and that's the next thing that I'm going to cover. The Cabin in the Woods by Joss Whedon did a special screening at WonderCon for WonderCon attendees only. You had to come across the golden ticket like it was a Willy Wonka movie to get into it. Got over there, got to sit down, and the LA Times Hero Complex played the movie a month in advance for fans. And I, at the end of the movie, I was one of those people that stood up and clapped. And I hate those people. Hate those people. But at the end, it was awesome. I mean, all the hype that's there for this movie, it deserves it. I think they did a great job with the horror genre and just getting people out there. You're expecting to jump the whole time you're watching this movie. And there's a lot of laughter parts during the movie. There was somebody in the audience that was really annoying with their laugh. Every 5 seconds they had their big, loud, boisterous laugh. But it fits into the movie while still being a horror movie. It's not like House on Haunted Hill where you're laughing because you know they're going to die stupidly. You know, I'm walking towards the fireplace, it's going to cut my head off. Okay, hi, stupid idiot. No, this was... you're laughing because they say something funny, but you have no idea if they're going to die, how they're going to die, any of that. And yeah, the cast does a great job. Again, it is Chris Hemsworth was in it before he was in Thor. They filmed this 5 years back, 4 years back. Joss Whedon wrote this while he was working on Buffy. The one surprise thing, and this isn't spoilers, there's no vampires in the movie.
Yay.
But other than that, it was... literally a stand-up and slow clap at the end of the movie. And they gave us free t-shirts, which I always love. And AJ's going to hate because I'll wear it to the movie midnight screening. But
you're going to be that guy.
I'm going to be that guy. And I'm going to be that guy that stands up and claps at the end again. And I guarantee you're going to do it too. And I'll take pictures for everybody.
Not going
to
happen.
Check back to the website for that.
I will not do it just for that.
I will pay money for that.
Yes, I will get a shot of it. If he's not crying. He may be crying. Let's see.
Do I look like Nessa?
Yeah. After the movie, Joss Whedon came out and did a Q&A with LA Times, Hero Complex, Jeff Boucher, and talked about getting this movie to the big screen, how they wanted to make a horror movie that was not like other horror movies but still had the aspects of a horror movie, the traditional horror movie we knew about, the details going into the movie. Of course, he's the producer on it, and so he was talking about how much fun it was to say, hey, they want this in the movie. Oh, you know what? I'm going to get the money for that. Do it. And to go through and to be able to push all these things through to make the movie the way he wanted it to be made was a lot of fun, versus making a TV show back in the time when they were like, oh, sorry, you got to move to UPN channel. Things like, you got to make your show into a comic book. Sorry, man. Yeah, forgive us. But it was good. And in Cabin in the Woods, it's April 13th, I think, is the official release date. It's worth seeing. It'll be worth the price of admission. And hopefully with the rate they're going to rate it, the R rating, we won't get those screaming teenagers in there as much for midnight screenings. Because it really does deserve an excited audience to see it, but they got to shut the hell up while we're watching it.
Yeah, no kidding. That might be a matinee as opposed to a midnight showing, just to get the right audience.
Yeah. And that was it for movies at WonderCon. Saturday was movie day, and so that's pretty much the whole day is where I spent my time.
Cool. WonderCon for us, for Forbidden Panel, was a completely different beast. This was the first year that – this is our first big convention, first off, that we've ever had a booth. And, it was pretty awesome. I believe the total count for WonderCon was like was it like 70,000?
It was up there. They said it was a big con. It wasn't an official sellout, but it's because they had a bigger venue with more tickets this year.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was pretty big, and it was – fairly awesome. But again, the problem with having a booth at WonderCon is that we don't really get a lot of time on the floor. You know, we're behind the booth and we're working, we're pimping out our wares and what have you. So I didn't really get to see a lot. What I did get to see was a lot of my good friends, John Narcomi, Chris Brady, Javier Hernandez, people like that. We got to see that on the floor, and that was cool. But booth-wise, it was phenomenal. It was the release date and premiere of our newest title called The Plagued, written by Daniel Whitfield and drawn by him, as well as the cover done by his girlfriend Camila Alaris. So they did exceptionally well. That release went great. We sold out. As of Sunday, we were completely sold out. ZKS books went great, flew off the shelves. Thank you to all the new friends that came out there. Thank you to the people that I offered cookies to that didn't call the police on me. So that went phenomenally. Sold t-shirts, sold posters, prints, everything. We all did great. And I just wanted to thank not only just the fans that came by, but the new fans that stopped by. Justin's art, again, flew off the shelves. It was also the first time that Junior Lopez, the creator and artist of El Super Maximo, was at a big show, as well as Lou Guevara, who created and wrote and drew Blackjack Slappers, so he had a good show as well. It was just all around phenomenal. And got a special thanks to Anthony Deciduo, as well as Daniel Corey, the writers and artists behind Image Comics' Moriarty. They came down to the booth and sat down for a couple hours, had a great time with us talking. Unfortunately, my dumbass forgot the voice recorder at home all 3 days because it was just a lot of work for me to handle. A lot of work for all of us to handle, but so I wasn't able to get any great interviews or anything like that. But there's a lot of photos up on the site. Rosie Newhart came down as a zombie. We had our ZKS boys dressed in full uniform escorting her around the WonderCon floor. It was just a great time for me. I don't think I've smiled so much in that long, you know. And it was just a wonderful feeling. And thank you everybody that came by. It was. I just can't say it. The fact that I had to wait in line twice to get to my own booth just tells you how great it was. So, yeah, there you have it. That was WonderCon for us. So, yeah, you missed a lot, Brian, again with the guilt trip.
Yep.
Great. He sounds really disappointed.
I know, huh? You can tell he really.
Yeah, it was awesome. I have to say, being able to be a part of it was really cool, and to be in the booth and just watch people come by and talk. I you know, I was one of those people. People always say this at Comic Cons, you know, I used to sit where you sit. So to be up on stage or to be behind the booth is just a completely different experience. But it really is.
Right.
And it was a lot of fun to have people come up who were excited about it, to see people of all ages coming to the booth to talk about it too. You know, to see a lot of the younger, new fans that are getting out there and getting in, you know, we can recruit 8-9-year-old zombie killers would be awesome.
Right.
Because then they'll be there for life. And
the highlight of my day, like on Sunday morning, I'm getting on the elevator, and here's a kid that came by our booth that was all excited about it. Had Justin draw him a little sketch. And he's like, yeah, we were up all night studying your zombie handbook. Memorized it all. The dad was like excited to see us. They're filming a zombie movie, which we're going to show at the Zombie Beauty Pageant. I mean, this little kid, I mean, couldn't have been more than, what, 8 or 9? And he was happy as hell that, you know, about the whole experience and Zombie Kill Squad this and blah, blah, blah. So, like that.
And he wants to make a zombie movie based on all of it.
Right.
Right.
So that in itself just made my con. Like, everything else could have been shit, and just had that alone, it made my con. So, you know, I was real grateful for the experience. Unfortunately, the big question that everybody had for us at WonderCon is, no, we will not be at San Diego Comic-Con with a booth. We will be on the floor acting like geeks and dorks like everybody else, but Comic-Con booths are way more expensive than WonderCon booths, and there's also a waiting line, a wait list. So, like, 3 years out in order to get a booth at San Diego Con. So, unfortunately, we will not be there, but we will be at WonderCon again next year, as well as APE. So, for those of you that came out to us, you know, we appreciate your loyalty and the fact that you find us, but we will not be at San Diego. So, having said that, I've got nothing else for this segment. Anybody got anything to say?
WonderCon was an awesome show. Can't wait to be at the next one.
Yeah, hopefully, I'm sorry, I missed it.
Hopefully the next one will not involve cheerleaders or volleyball players in the same convention hall, because that was not awkward at all, I swear.
Yeah, underage cheerleaders and volleyball players.
Yeah. Whew, that was random. Anyway, we'll go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the show.
Forbidden Panel is currently looking for artists. If you or someone you know would like to join us, please visit www.forbiddenpanel.com.
Welcome back, and continuing on from our talk of comic conventions, we're going to go from WonderCon to the next big Forbidden Panel show, the Inland Empire Comic Expo, happening next month. And AJ, you want to catch us up on that?
No.
Okay. I'll start then. So April 14th and 15th, you're doing a two-day show.
Yeah, this time we're going to do things a little bit differently. A few years ago, we realized that while we like going to WonderCon and all the other cons that are out there, with the exception of San Diego Con, nobody really likes going to San Diego Con. We just go because it's like we have to.
Yeah, it's like a religious trip. You almost have to make the pilgrimage.
Right. I mean, you know, that we thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we had a convention in town that we didn't have to drive for or spend a lot of money on hotels and pay jillions of dollars to eat? So we started organizing our own show. We put on our first one last year during Super Bowl Sunday, and we had a phenomenal response to it, and everybody seemed to have a wonderful and great time. So once again, we're putting on another show. Now, it's a little bit later than last year's. Last year, again, was during Super Bowl in February. And while we did have a great turnout, we thought to ourselves, why restrict ourselves and restrict everybody else to Super Bowl Sunday? Why don't we just have it, you know, on a later date when there's nothing really else going on, so we can entertain and give more people options and things to do? So this year we're doing it April 14th and 15th. We're doing a two-day show because we want to do a preview night the night before. It'll be your opportunity to come out between 7 and 8, get a look of all the stuff that you're going to be seeing the next day, and also have a chance, you know, after 8 o'clock, we're going to close up the floor, sit out in the foyer and upstairs, and just kick back and relax and talk geek shop. We'll probably be running some games upstairs. The bar will be open, and all the vendors and whatnot will be on the floor for at least the hour or so, just to kick back and talk with everybody and you know, get to know everybody. So it's a good opportunity for you guys to come out, watch some of your fan favorites getting hammered and acting a fool. So that's what we decided to do. And then follow it up the next day with the full entirety of the show. Tickets will be on sale this week. They will run $5 for preview night, $10 for the show, $15 for both days. And that's only if you buy your tickets ahead of time. You can purchase them online on the Forbidden Panel website, or you can go down to the Fox Event Center and purchase them there, or you can go to Super Bad Action Figures and purchase them there, and Four Color Fantasies as well. If you cannot purchase a ticket in any of those places and decide to show up, the prices will increase. For the day of the show, it will be $15, unless you come in costume. If you come in costume, the tickets will be $12. So we really want to promote the whole costuming aspect. There will be giveaways, costume contests, Martin dancing on a pole. We'll have zombies. We'll have the zombie Cobra Third Night Watch, Javier Hernandez, Zombie Tramp, just a whole bunch of other good stuff going on. So as well as Forbidden Panel and premiering all of our comic books that we have. So we just want to have a blast like we did last year. So hopefully you guys will be able to make it out.
It sounds fun, and last year was a lot of fun. Having it on Super Bowl Sunday, a lot of people kind of scoffed at that at first, but then to see the turnout was awesome.
Right.
A lot of people still came out and had a lot of fun, and just a variety boost. You were saying about having it just be a local con, but you also do it to promote a lot of these companies that get smothered at San Diego Comic-Con or even at WonderCon.
Right.
You know, you guys came out with a big booth at WonderCon, and that took a lot of work just to get that put together and to have a flow of traffic. So to have a con like this where you can actually push these smaller groups and people like, you know, John Narcomi coming out, an artist, and putting work out, Symantec and people like that to come out and do things at these smaller shows is just awesome. So you guys have created a cool environment for that, and I think it'll be fun to have a two-night party, and I'll try and keep my clothes on all weekend.
Then it, you know, you kind of defeat the purpose at that point, you know, if you just keep your clothes on. It's not a party until Martin gets naked.
That would take a lot of alcohol, which, never mind. Yeah. Anyways, so it sounds cool. Tickets are available. It's going to be April 14th and 15th.
Yeah.
And I think with that, we can end the show on a high note instead of a low note this time around.
That would be pretty awesome. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in this week. Sorry for the long wait between episodes. Again, but today you get two episodes. You get 90 and 91 both up at the site. So hopefully, you know, the next 12 hours of your life that you're listening to the show, we didn't bore you too badly.
Talk to everybody next time. See you guys.
Bye.
Panelcast is brought to you by Forbidden Panel. Please visit us at www.forbiddenpanel.com.